up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us on SB Nation AM this morning. Ron Culver on vacation, a well-deserved vacation. I am Tony D. We'll take you through the morning. Listen, all award shows are all of them. I don't care what they are. I don't care what they honor. There's always a publicity element to it. We kind of look at the Academy Awards, for example, the Oscars, and we say this is the pinnacle of the film industry. But it's the Academy of Motion Pictures, just a bunch of movie people talking about movie stuff, awarding movie people. The same thing that goes on with the Grammys. It's the pinnacle of the music industry, but it's music people rewarding music people for their music. So the ESPYs, and I've always been sort of standoffish a little bit on the ESPYs. It's a little bit, you know, a little self-promotion on ESPN's part, but it does celebrate the world of sports. It has gone through a number of changes. It's not necessarily must-watch TV in terms of like the Academy Awards, like the Oscars, but it is interesting to see just a review of the year that was in sports and sort of honor the, you know, special athletes, honor people who have done remarkable things, but also to sort of put in context what we've seen over the last 12 months or so. In that respect, it's kind of a cool thing to watch. If you're a sports fan, it's kind of a cool thing to watch. Can it be overblown at times? Is it controversial at times? Yeah, it's gone down many, many of those roads. It's delved into politics when it probably shouldn't have, and it's, you know, it's awarded people who probably didn't, you know, we kind of felt like maybe they shouldn't have gotten an award based on somebody else not getting an award. But that's all award shows. That's the way all award shows are. You have to watch these things with a little bit of grain of salt. You have to watch these things with some sort of a, you know, feeling of, you know, this isn't really the be all end all of the industry. You know, the Academy Awards may give out a movie, an Academy Award to a movie that isn't really the best picture of a given year. It just may be, yeah, they wanted to honor that picture for whatever reason. And the ESPYs is no different. But we'll go over the winners and the categories and all of that because maybe it does say what we want to say about the last 12 months in sports. We'll also get into the NBA because they do have a problem. Adam Silver now knows it's a problem. And what can they do about it regarding all of these deals that happened within seconds after free agents started? He knows there's an issue. We'll get to that at SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, thanks for joining us. It is a Throwback Thursday. Now, Gio was in for Ron Culver today, and he just took initiative and said, hey, it's 1985, and we're doing because Nolan Ryan became the first pitcher to strike out 4,000 batters in his career in 1985. So that's what we're doing. Well done, Gio. I like that. Very good.
Thank you. Thank
you. Good work.
I should have done 1994, the guy who broke Nancy Kerrigan's leg. I guess he got arrested.
On this date in 1994?
Yes.
And that's, oh, man.
Should have done that.
Sean Galluli? Was it that or the other guy? I don't even remember their names.
I don't even remember it. But it's my birth year. Should have done that.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, this is, let me see. We play a guessing game, by the way, when it comes to this. And this is Everyone Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears.
That is correct, sir.
Right. I'm keeping rolling along. This is a little bit more in my wheelhouse. Like, I was old enough to recognize music and who was playing the songs and what songs were on the radio. So this is more in my wheelhouse. This is going to be good.
I had no idea who any of these guys are, by the way. I have no idea.
Yeah, because most of them aren't around anymore. There's a big one-hit wonder type of aspect. Tears for Fears, though, was a pretty good band. They had a couple of hits. But there were a lot of, in the 80s, there were a lot of one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
It was easy to do. Create a good video, and you could have a hit. And you didn't necessarily have to have multiple hits. If you had a good song, and you made a really memorable, fun, I want to watch it video that MTV liked to air all the time, you could make a big hit and just get out of it and just be done. So it wasn't like you had to create studio albums like Fleetwood Mac or anybody else like that. You could just go, hey, I got a hit. It's catchy. It's cool. Let's go in the, let's go make a video out of it, and let's make a lot of money.
Yes. That's what
people did.
I mean, I wonder how long those royalties cash in, like Vanilla Ice and all those people.
I think they still get checks. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very small, but I think you still get a little money. You know, if you're in a group that has a lot of hits, it's unbelievable the amount you could just keep bringing in over and over again. I remember one of the Hall, it's either Hall or Oates, I don't know which one, lives in Aspen and just living off the royalties. Just keep coming. I think it's Oates. It just keeps coming in.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't made a song like, what, 10, 15 years?
Maybe, yeah, I think they still do kind of those tours. I think they still tour, you know, because people love nostalgia and still like to see them. But yeah, no, you can still make royalty checks rolling on in. Keep them coming as long as the songs get played on the radio and keep used for other things. I notice this trend with good music is now these these pharmaceutical companies are taking these songs and turning them into songs about their pharmaceutical product. Like there's one, I can't remember the name of the drug, which is a bad for an advertisement because I hear it all the time, but they use Fleetwood Mac's You Can Go Your Own Way, and it's like a weird version of it for this drug that does something for you. And I know they paid pretty, you know, really good money to use that song, but yeah, that's the other way you can make a lot of money with a song. Make it a hit, live off of it, and then sell it to some advertising agency to use it as a jingle.
Yeah, so. It's weird. It's like hearing this song and they're like, oh, need the blue pill?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And you're like, oh, cool. And then you list all the side effects, right, to Tears for Fears. So the ESPYs were last night, again, an award show for sports fans. And like I said before, take it for what it is. I have to preface this. I'm not a huge ESPY fan. I didn't watch this last night. I just don't watch the ESPYs. I should. I just don't. It's not my thing. I watch the Academy Awards, but I don't watch this, which is really weird because I make my living covering sports, and I make my, you know, I fill my, you know, leisure time watching sports and reading about sports. But it still is a neat barometer to see what people who are voting on this think about the year that we had. So the best male athlete, well, it was one of the top categories. And the nominees were Patrick Mahomes of the Chiefs, Mookie Betts of the Red Sox, Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks, and Brooks Koepka in the world of golf. And Antetokounmpo won the award, which is great because we've talked about Giannis for a long time, about getting to that superstar echelon and hitting it and staying there. And now, this isn't a validation of that by any means, but now it is a recognition of being the best player in the NBA this past season, you know, entering that next level, right? You can go from star, known player, star to superstar, you know, to household name. He's got a very interesting last name, but is becoming more household as the years go by. The best female athlete came down to Breonna Stewart of the Seattle Storm, Simone Biles, the gymnast, Alex Morgan of the women's soccer team, and Michaela Schifrin, who's a U.S. skier. And Alex Morgan won. And yeah, it's been a big week for the U.S. women's soccer team, winning the World Cup, and now they get to go to the ESPYs, and Alex Morgan takes home Best Female Athlete. The Best Breakthrough Athlete, and I found this one very interesting. Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers, Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks, Naomi Osaka, who we talked about yesterday, the young lady who beat Serena Williams in the U.S. Open in tennis, and Saquon Barkley for the New York Giants. And the winner was Saquon Barkley of the New York Giants. Now, I kind of find this interesting because I was living in New Jersey at the time of that draft, and it was a real debate about Saquon Barkley being drafted number two by the Giants in the New York media, or whether they should trade the pick, or whether they should go get quarterback. Saquon Barkley, and I remember going, how could you argue against Saquon Barkley? Take him. He's going to change your franchise. And he now gets the Best Breakthrough Athlete Award. Now, the Best Team Award, now these are the kind of awards I like, because again, they take account for the whole season. And what I like about these is that you can remember the year and see how you felt about a particular team, what it meant to watch that team in the past 12 months, you know, and just, you know, where does that particular championship, or whether that particular team, how does it fit in the entire world of sports? Not just its own sport and the history within its own sport, but how does it fit with all the other championship level teams that we've had over the past year? So there's about, looks like seven different nominees for Best Team of the Year. It came down to the Red Sox, the Clemson Tigers, the New England Patriots, the Toronto Raptors, Baylor Women, the Virginia men's basketball team and the U.S. women's soccer team. Guess who took home this award? Yeah, we got U.S. Fever. So the U.S. women's national team took home this honor. Now, listen, the U.S. women's team, they did something, and I said this on Monday, they did something which is very, very difficult to do in sports. And that is, especially in a single elimination tournament, it is very difficult to dominate your competition and end up winning the title. We've seen it in the NCAA tournament all the time, right? Really good basketball teams that have played excellent the entire season, look head and shoulders better than everybody else, fail to win the title, especially in an elimination. It's hard to do. Now, it's a little easier when you get a best of five or a best of seven, because eventually your excellence will shine through. Not to say there aren't upsets, but usually your excellence will shine through. But in a one game, anything can happen, magical type of moment, a lot of times you can't get it done. A lot of times you don't dominate like people think you do, and yet the women's national team did just that. But the team I thought would have won it, if it wasn't going to be them, the team that I thought was going to win it would have been two. One, Virginia. I thought Virginia's championship was fantastic. There was a tremendous amount of pressure on the Cavaliers to do well in the NCAA tournament after losing to UMBC the year before, becoming the first one seed to lose to a 16 seed. For them to bounce back and not only do well in the tournament, and if they had, you know, lost in the Final Four, it still would have been a good season. It still would have been a little bit more validation for Tony Bennett. Like, okay, maybe it was just a fluky loss. But they won the national title, and I thought that was does something pretty incredible in sports. But the surprise team that I didn't see on here was the St. Louis Blues. And the St. Louis Blues, they got honored later, but the St. Louis Blues had a remarkable story, being in last place in the NHL in early January, and yet finding a way to turn their season around, getting into the Stanley Cup Finals, and winning over the Boston Bruins, and in doing something that is really, again, it's almost as hard to do from what the U.S. women did, which is live up to the expectations of being a dominating team. The St. Louis Blues were a team that nobody was really buying until they started, all right, maybe they will make the playoffs. And then you get into the playoffs and then you win the first round. Then you win the second round. Then you win the finals in your conference. And then you go to the Stanley Cup Finals. And to keep that momentum going, because you wonder, a team that is that bad at one point, when does that show up again, right? Like, you may have fixed it, but is the thing that made you awful in the first place ever going to rear its head? Jordan Binghamton came aboard. He was stellar in goal. And I was surprised that they didn't at least nominate that team. Maybe it was because it was a little early from the cutoff. I don't know. But that was a team I was surprised wasn't at least nominated for this. But the U.S. women's national team, perfect, perfect honor for that. Men's soccer player award went to Lionel Messi. Does it ever go to anybody other than Ronaldo or Messi? I mean, I'm not a huge international soccer fan, but it seems like those two are going to win the ESPYs every year. Just trade it off. The best women's soccer player internationally was Sam Kerr of Australia. Now we get to some more sports that we know a little bit more. The best NFL player, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Donald, Todd Gurley, Drew Brees. It went to Patrick Mahomes. Best Major League Baseball player, Mookie Betts, Christian Yelich, Jacob DeGrom, Blake Snell. The winner was Christian Yelich. Could have been DeGrom. That would have been fun. I love DeGrom's Cy Young Award. The fact that he had like a 1-point-something ERA and he was like 10-10 on the season. Best NHL player, that went to Alexander Ovechkin. Nikita Kucherov, Connor McDavid, and Nathan MacKinnon of the Avalanche were nominated. Kyle Busch won the best driver, beating Lewis Hamilton of Formula One and Scott Dixon in IndyCar. The best NBA player went to Giannis. James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Paul George were also nominated. And Breanna Stewart was the best WNBA player. I want to get to, we'll get to some more of these coming up, because again, I think it puts the sports year into some sort of context, but we'll get to some of the other ones, including best play and some of the other more fun categories. That's all coming up. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It is Throwback Thursday. On this date, in 1985, Nolan Ryan struck out his 4,000th batter. We got to get to that in a second. By the way, is this Wham?
Yes, it is.
George Michael. And I don't know the other guy, so don't ask me. I don't know who the other guy is. But I know neither. George Michael was on this.
George Michael was part of Wham?
He was part of Wham, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Didn't George Michael pass away? Didn't he die?
Yeah, I think he did.
I think he did.
Yeah.
By the way, so go back to Nolan Ryan for a second. So Nolan Ryan, like, he has one of those careers that you sort of go, oh yeah, he pitched a long time. And then when you realize how long he pitched, it should make you have a double take. You sort of take it for granted, like, yeah, Ryan pitched a long time, had a really long career. But when you really think about it, he had an incredibly long career. This guy started pitching in the majors in 1966. He pitched for the Mets in the 1969 playoffs. For the Miracle Mets. He pitched in the World Series against the Baltimore Orioles. He saved game 3, pitching 2 1/3 shutout innings against the Orioles, giving the Mets the win. It was his only the only time he played in the World Series was in 1969. He lasted until 1993. He struck out his 4,000th batter in 1985. He became the first Major League Baseball player to do that. He gets to 1985, and then he plays like 8 more years after that, retiring in 93. Pitched 7 no-hitters, the last one in 91. He had one in 73 and 91. It's amazing.
And this is like before all the medical advances that they have today.
Exactly. And all the superior training and everything else like that.
I don't think he did like yoga like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did or anything like that. I feel like he was a hot dog. Well, we know he's a hot dog guy. He has a hot dog brand over here in Texas.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like he was like a workout at 5 a.m. kind of guy.
No, exactly. Got in that fight with Robin Ventura. Remember that?
Oh, that's
Ventura
classic.
Charged them out. Classic. But man, guy played for the 69 Mets and then retired in 93 at the end of the 93 season.
That's crazy, man.
It's crazy.
That's 30
yeah.
years?
Yeah, good chunk of time. Don't make me do math this early, Gio. That's a long career. 25 years. 2 full decades. He started in 66, so he was with the Mets in 66, and then 68 through 71, then he was with the Angels from 72 to 79, then he was with the Astros from 80 to 88, and he was with the Rangers from 89 to 93, and called it a career.
It is possible that if somebody growing up could see Nolan Ryan play, and then their son growing up watched Nolan Ryan play.
That's very true. That is very true. That is a very good point. Exactly. That's exactly right. 8-time All-Star. So on this date, he struck out Danny Heap for his 4,000th strikeout.
Wait, only 8 times?
Yeah.
Eight-time All-Star?
Yeah, 8-time All-Star.
What? Out of 20-something years?
Yeah, 8-time All-Star.
That's not good.
And, yeah, no, he should have been more than that. He didn't win any. He didn't go to any in his latter part of his 40 plus. You know, when he was in his 40s, but he was a World Series champion in 1969, as I mentioned before. 2-time NL ERA leader. He was a strikeout leader 11 times in his career. So 5,714 strikeouts. So he had 1,714 strikeouts after 1985.
That's never going to get broken, man.
Nah, man, that's a lot of Ks, man. That is a lot of strikeouts. So
I don't think nobody's going to play like 30 years again, though.
No, I don't think so either. It's a long time. That is a really long time. All right, so back to the ESPY Awards last night. So there were a couple of other superlative awards, if you will, is what they call them, sort of best game and best viral moment, et cetera, et cetera. But the other awards for the sports best male golfer went to Brooks Koepka, beating Tiger Woods, Justin Rose, and Francesco Molinari. Best female golfer went to Brooke Henderson. Best tennis player, Roger Federer. Best female player was Serena Williams. Best male action sports athlete, Nyjah Houston, skateboarder. I don't know much about skateboarding, so I'm sure that was well-deserved. Chloe Kim of snowboarding, I've heard of her. She was the best female action athlete. The best jockey went to Mike Smith. All right, take your word for it. Best male athlete with a disability, Mark Barr, triathlon. Best female athlete with a disability, Alyssa Seeley, triathlon. Here's a cool one. Best bowler. Best bowler went to Norm Duke.
They have a best bowler?
They have a best bowler award for the ESPYs. Now, given how many times bowling's on ESPN, I'm sure they just felt like they had to do this one.
It's a marketing thing.
Yeah, it's because like, remember, they not only had bowling, but they really promoted bowling. There was a time when the promos were really fun and everything. But there's still, every now and then, you catch bowling on ESPN, and I'm sure they would no problems saying, well, let's pick a best bowler. Best MLS player went to Zlatan Ibrahimovic. How do you pronounce his name? I don't know. Ibrahimovic. The LA Galaxy. Yeah, I am really showing my lack of soccer knowledge.
He's
by
a legend.
Mispronouncing a legendary player like him. I know he's a legendary player. I just don't know how to pronounce his name.
I don't think anybody. I think every time I see the MLS play on TV, they never say his last name.
So yeah.
Zlatan.
Zlatan, is that how you say it?
I have no idea, man.
Okay. All right, so the best game of the award, there were three. LSU defeated Texas A&M 74-72 in a 7-overtime thriller. The Rams defeated the Chiefs 54-51 on Monday Night Football. Notre Dame defeated UConn 81-74 in the Final Four. The winner was the Rams over the Chiefs. Now, remember this game back in the fall? Remember how many people at the end of this said, oh my God, what a classic. What an entertaining night. What an amazing night of offense. How great were these two quarterbacks? How great were these two teams? Oh my God, I hope this is a Super Bowl preview. This was awesome. And you remember the flip side? How many people went, this is a travesty to the game of football. How dare we celebrate this nonsense? 54-51. I have an idea. Why don't you just shorten the field and put an arena around us? My God, 54-51. Does anybody have any defensive pride on either one of these teams? My God, Wade Phillips is the defensive coordinator for the Rams, for crying out loud. He can't stop Kansas City. This was the cry that happened at the end of this game. And I think that's one of the reasons why it should have won best game, because it was entertaining and it was awesome. But at the same time, if you've been following the NFL for a long time and you've been watched all these sorts of games, you felt like you were watching and enjoying something you weren't supposed to watch, weren't supposed to enjoy, right? Like, I'm not supposed to really be liking this. It's 54-51, for crying out loud. They're scoring at will. It's like when you go to a baseball game and it's like 14-13. You're like, this isn't really a baseball game.
Like, I'm watching bad pitching right now.
Yeah, I'm watching bad pitching, right? Like, I'm watching guys that can't get the ball over the plate or getting it over the plate in a way that guys are just smashing the hell out of it. That's what this football game was. But my God, it was fun. It really was a blast. But the flip side was really angry defensive people that said, this can't happen. You can't sustain this. Because I remember the conversation after a game like this was, okay, now our NFL team's going to look at their offenses and say, yeah, that's where it's going to be now. I got to really make sure that that's all in tune. We got to put up 40-something a game now. This is where the league's going. And then you get to the Super Bowl, and what happens? Defensive battle, right? Just a defensive battle. What was the final score of the Super Bowl? 13-3? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's how quickly we went from, my God, this is fantastic, and now the NFL is changing forever, to, all right, we're back to defensive football again. Okay, I get it. Yeah, there's another side of the coin that we're totally ignoring. But nevertheless, this still was fantastic. It was still a fantastic game.
I think it should have won, because if you remember, both teams were going undefeated into that week.
That's right.
It lived up to the hype. Everybody was so hyped about the game. Like, this is 250 teams. And it lived up to it. It's hard to do.
It's very hard to do. You're absolutely right. Best college athlete, Zion Williamson of Duke, and best record-breaking performance. This was interesting. Matthew Boiling of the high school track and field kid from Texas in the 100 meters, or Klay Thompson hitting 14 three-pointers in a game, Saints Drew Brees becoming the all-time passing leader, and Oregon Sabrina Nsanchu becomes the all-time leader in triple-doubles. It went to Drew Brees. Now, I will say, nothing against Drew Brees, but a record like that, most passing yards in NFL history, that wasn't a oh my god moment. That was going to be eventually broken by Breeze at some point. It just happened and it was exciting and it was fun. I think what that high school kid did, Matthew Bowling, that is one of the most impressive, incredible things I had seen in the past year in terms of something viral. I thought that was amazing. SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, 1985. This is Axel F. This is from Beverly Hills Cop. But I don't know who did it.
Harold Faltermeyer?
Faltermeyer? Okay.
I think this was his only hit, maybe.
Yeah.
Never
this
heard
is,
of him again.
This is from...
I knew this
Beverly
one.
Hills Cop.
I knew this one. I love Beverly Hills Cop.
Beverly Hills Cop is a good movie that's still, you could still watch it today. It's dated in a way, but it's still a very good movie. It's funny. Got a lot of iconic moments in it from Eddie Murphy's comedy. I still love his reaction when he checks out of the hotel at the end of the movie and how he kind of, you know, he uses the cops pay for it and everything. And he takes like bath towels or he takes bath robes and things like that. That's kind of cool. But, he does that where he's the Michael Jackson bit and he's in town and it's expensive hotel, but it's still a great movie,
man. It's a lot of bits that he did. It was just
banana
incredible.
In the tailpipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
And his supporting cast was so good too.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Judge Reinhold was in that. Yeah. So good, yeah, good flick. 1985, Nolan Ryan on this date, 4,000 strikeouts, first to do that in 1985. So I had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about the equal pay situation with the women's national team and the U.S. men's national team. And boy, I'll tell you right now, I've been saying this pretty much all week, and I want to reiterate this. To me, as a guy who's covered a lot of sports in my time, got into this business because I love sports. I understand that sometimes like politics creeps into sports, and I get it. I get it. There's just sometimes where that happens, where we take the political issues of the day and it translates to how we view sports. And when sports becomes politicized, I feel like it becomes a poison to the sports world. I know the Colin Kaepernick kneeling for the national anthem was troubling to a lot of people. I hated the fact that couldn't be resolved in a way that people said, I'm giving up on the NFL. I'm quitting the NFL. Like, I didn't want to quit the NFL. I was bothered by it, but I didn't want to quit the NFL. Like, to me, my love for sports is not so precarious that something like that could tip it in either direction. And something like the U.S. women's national team celebrating the United States winning that World Cup should be something we all should be enjoying, but a lot of us can't, or some of us can't, because of the politicization of what's been going on with this win. For some reason, it's being attached to politics. Now, some know that reason, some don't, but there is politics involved in how people are viewing this. When we all should be saying, hey, congratulations, women. Well done. Congratulations on winning the World Cup again, back-to-back World Cups, fourth in the history of the country. But a lot of it has to do with this pay issue. And so I was talking to this friend of mine, and we got to talking about whether or not the men and the women should be paid equally. And he felt like, first of all, the men and the women on the World Cup side shouldn't be paid at all. That they should be like the Ryder Cup. When you're representing the United States, you shouldn't be paid, period. And in a way, I understand where he was coming from. Olympic athletes might get paid per medal, but they don't get $60,000 to go to the Olympics. I mean, they're not paid like professional athletes, you know, doing their craft for the good of the United States, Olympic Committee or just country pride or whatever. And he felt like the U.S. men and women soccer teams should, again, be like the Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup athletes for the United States do not get paid. They get chosen, they go to the Ryder Cup, and they play for the United States. And they play for free. The golfers who make millions of dollars during the year, 1 week, they play for Team USA, and they do it for nothing. And same with Europe. They do it for nothing. But my argument to him was that this issue is not as clear cut as people are making it out to be. It's not a matter of, well, FIFA should just give the women the same amount of money as they give the men. It's not as clear as that. And I think many of us get that, right? There's a lot of ignorance that's being politicized out there when it comes to this issue. This is one of the reasons I don't like when my political friends, the ones in my industry that make their living talking about politics, when they dive into the sports world and use politics to explain sports things. The two don't necessarily go hand in hand. Whether you have liberal values or conservative values, sometimes when you take those and put them into the sports world, it doesn't work. It doesn't fit. You know, sometimes you have to be more liberal when it comes to viewing sports, and you may be conservative on other things. And sometimes you have to be more conservative in sports when you are more liberal on social issues on the other side of the political spectrum. It's just, that's just the way it is, right? And for example, let me give you, I think that players in Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, all of that deserve as big of a piece of that economic pie as they possibly can. I am not troubled by their salaries. I am not troubled by 3 years, $38 million, you know, or whatever it is. I'm not troubled by that because the money is there. It's not coming from any other entity than the willingness and the participation of those of us who choose to spend our money on those leagues. I don't have a problem with it. They're not getting taxpayer-funded money, anything like that. They are getting private. It's a private business. It's a business that is making billions, and I want to see labor share in that. Now, I may be more conservative fiscally in other areas, but for that reason, I think the players, I always support players in their pursuit of more freedom to move around where they want to and getting a bigger share of the economic pie. But when it comes to this equal pay situation in terms of the World Cup soccer, I don't think people realize how much the different money is between the men and the women. And it was eye-opening to me earlier this week. And I shared this to my friend, again, who thinks none of them should be paid, but if you're going to pay them, make sure you pay them out equally. There's a couple of things to know here. The men negotiated a collective bargaining agreement with USA Soccer that pays them a salary, a bonus situation per game, right? If they lose, they get $5,000. If they win, they get more. But they guaranteed at least $5,000 per game that they play on the soil in these other tournaments or whatnot. The women negotiated a salary and benefits package that sometimes is less than the men, but could be more than the men, depending on games they play, etc. But when it comes to the World Cup and the way FIFA divvies it up, they want to shell out more, but when they do that, they're going to shell out more for the men, and when they do that, that gap is going to get wide. That gap is going to get widened. But the percentage of what the women are generating in terms of percentage of revenue from their particular World Cup is more than what the men are getting. It's just the dollar figures are very different. The men's World Cup generated $6 billion in revenue, which is way, way more than what the women World Cup generated. But percentage-wise, the women made more of a percentage. It's just not the same check, right? The check is just not the same. And what complicates the matter more is the success that the women have at their World Cup level compared to the success of the men in the World Cup stage, where sometimes, as we saw last year, they didn't even make the field. Right? So I understand that this is an emotional and political issue that is plaguing soccer right now. Especially the way the chance for equal pay, those speeches, et cetera, the lawsuit. It's hard to enjoy, just sit back and enjoy the fact that the United States won the Women's World Cup, because you also have to dive into this every now and then. And there are people who just assume that what is keeping the women on the World Cup level, what is keeping the women from getting paid more money or getting paid equal money than the men, is just pure misogyny. And that's not necessarily the case. Right? What is plaguing them is the fact that their revenues aren't the same. It's not even close. And so if you want the women to get paid as much as a men's team, then you would take all of the money, literally all of the money that World Cup generated. They'd have to take all of it because that would be the share that's equal on the men's side. And again, I listen to these arguments and I watch the news and I see the talking heads on all the news programs from MSNBC to Fox to CNN, and they all want to have people to talk about this, but they're talking to the wrong people about this. Right? They're talking to the wrong people. They talk to politicians or they talk to political spokespeople. Talk to the people who cover the sport. Let's go to the people who really know and let them explain this. Let's go to the people who are saying, look, let's take emotion out of this for a second. Could the women get paid the same as the men when they do a friendly in Chicago? If the women play a friendly in Chicago and the men play a friendly in Chicago, can the money be equal? The answer to that should be yes, right? Because the women sell out too, and the women sell out their merchandise too. So let's at least move in an effort to do that, okay? So, but that takes a change in the negotiations. It's not that the men get more because they're men. And it's not even that the men get more because they generate more revenue. You could argue that that's not true at all. The way the men structured their deal in collective bargaining was to say, okay, we want to be paid this guarantee per game. And then if we win, we want these bonuses attached to it. So give us an incentive when we win, we get this amount of money. But we're guaranteed at least this when we play. Okay, we can do that. The women said, pay us a salary. We want a salary and benefits. So then financially, the two are not on the same, they're just not on the same pay scale. Now, if they were on equal pay scale, meaning they both collectively bargained the same deal, it is quite possible the women would make more. But they didn't. So the money is different. Now, on the World Cup, I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you fix that. If the men go to the World Cup and the piece of the pie that FIFA gives the United States for their participation in that event is divvied up and it's X amount of dollars, and then the women go to the World Cup and what FIFA gives the United States for winning it or at least coming in the finals is divvied up and those two numbers are not equal, I don't know who you complain to. USA Soccer? Are they supposed to figure out the difference? Are they supposed to make it up by taking it out of some, you know, some vault? Or do they say, all right, well, the men, you're going to get the same as the women and we're going to keep the rest. You deserve this amount of money for participating in an event that generated $6 billion and our share is this. We divvy it up this way to you. Here you go. But because the women aren't going to make as much and we believe in equal pay, you're going to get less. And so when you're going to get less, we're going to take that money and we'll figure out what we're going to do with it. Maybe have a pizza party at the end of it all. I mean, what are we doing here? It's more complex than people want. People think it's simple, and it's just a matter of a bunch of guys sitting in a room going, ah, those women don't deserve anything. But the economics are showing that there is whether it's collective bargaining, whether it's revenue generated on the World Cup stage, there are ways we can fix this. There are ways we can deal with this, but it isn't just a matter of a big pile of Scrooge McDuck money, and then the United States soccer team finally has to go, all right, I'm going to go into the big coins and go divvy up some more money for you. Sorry I hoarded all this. I think the issue needs to be examined more closely, but explained better. Because when you take the political candidates and throw them on television and they were all like, well, of course they should get equal amount of money, right? That doesn't help the cause, or at least getting people to understand the cause and understand. And then we can really figure this out. We can really sit down and go, what are the real obstacles here? What is the real issues behind this? And let's figure out how to make those more equal. And it may be renegotiating the collective bargaining agreement from the women's side of things. Maybe it is. And if that's the case, then all by all means. All right, hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio is rolling along on SB Nation AM or 800-777-2907 as we cruise along on a throwback Thursday.
I used to think that love was just a thing.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Throwback Thursday got a lot more easy listening. 1985. Does this exemplify Nolan Ryan striking out his 4,000th batter?
Absolutely. Suddenly, you're out.
Suddenly, you're out, right? Who sang this? I can't quite peg it.
It's Billy Ocean.
Billy Ocean, okay. I know Billy Ocean from Caribbean Queen, and I think he did a song with Phil Collins, but I don't remember this one.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of love songs. I don't know what's going on during the summer 1985. Of 85. Yeah.
85? Well, Back to the Future was a hit.
Yeah, maybe so. That's it. You know, was it the first one?
Yeah, the first one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that whole, what was her name? Michael J. Fox's girlfriend's name.
Oh, in the in the movie, when he went back in time, Leah Thompson.
Yeah, Leah Thompson was
Leah
so
Thompson.
Hot in that movie.
Yeah, very 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 cute, very cute. Yeah, good movie. It was so funny when 2015 rolled around and we were like, we don't have any of this stuff. They predicted all of these things. We have none of it. What happened? But I think we had better stuff. Like, we didn't have the automatic laced-up shoes and the drying shirt and the hoverboards, and the hoverboards was a big deal. But, you know, we walk around with computers in our pockets, for crying out loud. I mean, how awesome is that?
What else do you want?
I mean, what else do you want?
You think
you have a computer in your pocket?
Cool?
Yeah. Flying cars. You have to land that thing. As Neil deGrasse...
Pilot license.
Exactly. Neil deGrasse Tyson said, you know, we already have flying cars. They're called helicopters. He goes, if you want a flying car, the amount of power and thrust it would take to get a car up in the air would be so noisy. And if you multiplied that by everybody on the highway, for example, it would just burst your eardrum. And that kind of killed the dream for me. So thanks, astrophysicists.